today, like, we are super happy to receive Livia. She will be presenting a research and actually an exhibition which connects actually a past event, which is very, let's say, like a Parisian exhibition which is quite famous called Les Immatériaux, which opened, I think, in 85, if I'm not mistaken, with Jean-François Lyotard as a kind of, let's say, one of the brain of the project, but it involved also, I think, Bruno Latour, Isabel Stengers in the catalogue, and Michel Thibon-Cornio was also the scientific advisor of the exhibition. Michel was also like a good friend and a thinker of science, who passed away like during the COVID 2 years ago. And if there is, I think, like a joint research program between Pompidou and ZKM. So Olivia is a curator in ZKM in Karlsruhe, so a very famous institution for art and technology. And there is this joint program around Les Immatériaux. There was also an exhibition in Karlsruhe who closed quite recently called Antimatter, if I'm not mistaken.
I will tell it, don't worry.
There is a special event that will start tomorrow in Pompidou and a series of talks on Saturday around Les Immatériaux, and there is like an exhibition of 3D models of the exhibition. And so we thought it was a good opportunity to come back on Les Immatériaux and to also explain a little bit what's happening in Pompidou and expand a little bit on all this, let's say, program and approach. So, thank you for coming here. And
thanks for the invitation. Mm-hmm. And thanks for the introduction. So yes, it's what I will be talking about is a very visual subject, but it's not maybe the best for the radio. But I will try to do my best in terms of explanations of visual materials, and. Actually, I will be talking about an experiment what we embarked on with the Centre Pompidou 4 years ago, in the end. And 4 years ago, we came up with the idea that we would like to bring back to life digitally two past exhibitions that that already took place, and in the meantime, they became very famous. Well, one of them became very famous, that's Les Immatériaux. And but we also wanted to choose one exhibition that is that might be important for the future of exhibition histories from the ZKM, from the Center for Art and Media. And this is why we chose the first exhibition, the first collaboration between Bruno Latour and Peter Weibel, which was called Iconoclash. It took place in 2002, and they invited, it was rather Bruno Latour who invited a board of different scientists and curators and art historians to convene an exhibition on representation and the conflicts around representation. So while Les Immatériaux was rather about new materialities, not as they say, it's not about immaterialities, but rather new materialities. The exhibition Iconoclash was about the conflicts of representation, and these two topics with the two exhibitions were brought together in our investigation, which had many layers. So on the one hand, we literally tried to figure it out, how to create or recreate or model or emulate, there were so many words around this, past exhibitions that are assemblies of different objects, but they were also assemblies of different relations. And obviously the relations can hardly be brought back to life by digital means. It's rather the On the one hand, the architecture, on the other, the scenography and the arrangements of the different objects and the information, whether it's sound or written information, textual material, and so on and so forth. So it can be represented more or less thoroughly if we have the material, the information to base on. And well, yeah, that was maybe starting from the beginning the biggest problem, because in 85, although the Centre Pompidou was an institution that existed for a couple of years already, that but at the time they didn't think of documentation as much as museums think of it now. So we have around 200 photos of the exhibition at the Kandinsky Library, and there were obviously a lot of paper material, like notes of Lyotard, of Thierry Chapou, who was the co-curator.
Who is the co-curator?
Thierry Chapuis.
Chapuis.
Sorry for my pronunciation. So, and yeah, Bernard Blisten was also a part of the, although it was not declared that he was a curator of the exhibition, but he played a very important role in bringing in artworks in the exhibition, because it was a very mixed show of altogether 61 thematic sites. That showcased different exhibits from material samples to artworks to experimental models of different these were like writing experiments. It's approved écriture, my pronunciation again, but which was an idea of Lyotard, and he invited, among others, Bruno Latour to write definitions for keywords. And these definitions then were part of a computer system of different Olivettis in one network within the exhibition, and visitors could browse between the different definitions. And then it was also printed out, and that was the second catalog to the exhibition. The first one was rather a list and the actual catalog of the artworks or exhibits that were presented in the show. Yes, so it was a very complex exhibition with these 61 sites, also a very complex scenography that didn't contain any walls, but there were metal meshes hanging from the wall. There were to support the idea of new materiality or immateriality with this levitating scenography. Also, the showcases were very fragile, made out of plexiglass, and lots of plastic was used in this exhibition, and lots of metal mesh as well, beside the artworks, and the light was sort of dimmed down. It was more or less dark. And we know this from the photos, but not only from the photos. There's basically one video, which was a TV documentary, or it's a TV report that was created on the exhibition. It's called Octave because a teenage boy whose name is Octave is rushing through the exhibition with skates, and that's the most accurate moving image what we have of this this show, and this is how we can sort of reconstruct how it looked like, at least in terms of scenography, because it was very difficult for the archivist. It was not me who was working on this, but an archivist, Marie Visset and Andreas Bruckmann, who tried to reconstruct how it really looked like, which piece was where, and how they were exhibited, how they were printed out, how they were pinned on the non-existent walls, and so on and so forth. And it was a task that took up a lot of time on the one hand, despite the fact that this is a very well-researched exhibition. So there's already a monography that was written by Antonia Wunderlich, and she takes the readers through the exhibition already. So if you read the book, you are walking through Les Immatériaux after reading about the exhibition policies of the Centre Pompidou and after reading about the curatorial concept of Lyotard. But basically in the book you are already taken through the entire exhibition. But nevertheless, it was difficult to locate all the bits and pieces, and for a digital model in which you can wander around as a visitor, just like in an exhibition, it is very important to be accurate about the past exhibition, or at least to distinguish between information that is clear and that can be verified, and information that is not sure. So we chose in the end different types of representation of these objects, and the ones which are not clearly there, where they maybe were or maybe weren't in the original exhibition, are more hazy than the other ones. And the colleagues at the Centre Pompidou who finally decided about the look and feel and the design of the exhibition model decided for something more abstract than a photorealistic representation. So this is why it's also a model. It's not a photogrammetric documentation of that floor of the Centre Pompidou or of different objects that were part of it. But it's also dimmed down. It's black and white, and the objects are more like silhouettes, and they are a bit more concrete if we know how they looked like, and a bit more hazy and ghost-like if we don't have exact information on their former whereabouts. But nevertheless, and that was also a very interesting discussion what I had at the conference with Yukui, actually, 2 weeks ago in Bochum at a conference. Where he said that, yeah, there was already a book that described a route through the exhibition. So Antonia Wunderlich did already this job. So she described a linear way through Les Immatériaux and what is the additional value of creating a model. And, the most... the simplest answer is that this is not a linear text, so it's not a book. So you can wander around in it, and you can actually listen to the original soundtrack. That is another important addition to the show itself. Because each and every site had an own soundtrack, and that was related to the subject of the site itself, and this soundtrack was created out of voice recordings of different quotes, different literary and philosophical pieces put together by Dolores Lyotard throughout the preparations for the exhibition. So it was not an audio guide, but it was an additional audio layer to the exhibition. And What I wanted to say with this is that this was this is something that obviously cannot be accessed if we are reading through a book that is documenting the parkour, the possible parkour throughout the exhibition. So that's one important point about creating a digital model. So now this soundtrack is there; it can be listened to, almost in a way as it could be listened to in the exhibition space. And the other, probably also as important as the previous one, is that this exhibition was not laid out as a single way or as a linear scenography. It was a maze, and in that sense, it's quite important that we can get lost in this digital space as well, just like the visitors of the Centre Pompidou in 85 could do that. And this is how contemporary visitors of this model can have a similar experience, obviously not the same, but a little bit similar experience to the one the former visitors had. So that was the main aim with creating the model of Les Immatériaux. And we had this other exhibition to deal with, which was Iconoclash. And it is not going to be that much emphasized in the exhibition that is opening tomorrow at the Centre Pompidou, because they put emphasis more on Les Immatériaux and objects that were part of Les Immatériaux. There will be also reconstructions, or rather emulations, of Minitel works that were part of Les Immatériaux. And obviously these are from a media archaeological perspective very interesting experiments. So like it's an alternative to net art as we know it, at least in certain circles of media art history. So okay, let's put Les Immatériaux aside and let's dive into Iconoclash, which is easier. It's much easier to dive into from the perspective of the archivist, because it took place in 2002. 2002 was a time on the verge of analog and digital photography, on the verge of sending faxes and writing emails. This is why it's a very, very well documented exhibition. So if you think about it, like the first email in Europe was sent in 94, and 8 years later the organization of this exhibition was almost completely done via email. Obviously there were a lot of phone calls, but we have a huge record of emails from the time. And there were also a lot of digital photos already that document the exhibition, as well as videos, which were very, very helpful in reconstructing how the exhibition looked like. In addition to all this, the architect of the exhibition, Manfred Wolf Plotegg, decided to create a 3D model for the exhibition scenography, which was quite a pioneering activity at the time, to create a 3D model for a scenography by an architect, and that was also an addition what we could use in creating a concept for the model. And nevertheless, we thought that this is a once in a lifetime experiment to have the resources and the time and also the interest of many parties to reconstruct an exhibition or to model an exhibition, because this is way further from reconstruction than the Les Immatériaux exhibition model. Since we had all this material, so we were not focusing on archival research that much. Or obviously, we had to put the information in place, and we had to sort the information. But we had a vast amount of material, so in the end, it would have been completely viable task to reconstruct the exhibition almost in a photogrammetric manner as it was. But we thought that that maybe it's too simple, so let's go for something else that is maybe more meaningful and that can be more generic in a way, and that can be used later to either to present other past exhibitions or to present archives in a spatial way. And in interviews with the curators, with Bruno Latour, with Peter Weiber first, and then Dario Gamboni, Adam Love, and who else was there? Peter Gallison, Joseph Leo Kerner, Boris Groys, and I think this is it. So as you can figure, it's an entirely male board of curators, and obviously not all of them was represented in the interviews, because we reached out to everyone, but not everyone answered. But it was an overwhelmingly white male curatorial board and also scientific board who came up with this idea and with this selection on iconoclasms in different topics. One topic was art, so how modern art dealt with iconoclasm. It was mainly about abstraction, how it came about, and what it did with representation in the visual arts. The other important point was religion, it was mainly the task of Joseph Leo Kerner and Heather Stoddard, who curated a part about Tibetan iconoclasm, and another part by Joseph Leo Kerner was rather about the fights between Catholicism and Reformation. So, like iconoclasm throughout the period of Reformation. Then. Science was represented by Peter Gallison, and objects of scientific imagery from mathematics to quantum physics and image making practices in the sciences and their contradictions. That was his part, and obviously there were also political imagery, including the Berlin Wall, including the Bastille, the model of the Bastille that was part of the exhibition. There were more than 400 pieces in the show in a very complex temporary architecture. That was created by Manfred Wolf Plotegg, and I also already mentioned his name, I'm sorry. So, in the beginning, he wanted to create a dynamic and malleable architecture that can be moved, that can be tossed around in the exhibition space, so to say. But obviously, it was not viable to put artworks such as Malevich's from the Tretiakov Gallery on walls that can be moved around, and they are not so stable, and so on and so forth. So in the end, they decided for a more stable architecture that still had quite a dynamic image. But as we discussed the possibility of modeling the exhibition in digital space, where no restrictions as such exist, we came up with the idea together with Peter Weibel and Manfred Wolf-Potek to put together a malleable, dynamic exhibition architecture in digital space. And in the end, what we could put together was, it's still online, and it is still accessible, just like the Les Immatériaux model, by the way. It can be also visited on a website, not only in an exhibition space. But nevertheless, what we came up with is a relational space. So a space in which only the artworks and the temporary architecture, the artworks attached to, are present. So the entire container that was the Center for Art and Media, the ZKM, at the time, is not there. So we just have a plane, and all these temporary architectural elements with the artworks on them. And since there were thematic clusters in this exhibition, it was quite easy to define different keywords. And the artworks are tagged with all these different keywords, or like some of the different keywords that are fitting to them. And as soon as I'm getting closer to one or the other piece of art or exhibit, and I enter its so-called activation zone, recommender algorithm starts its work. And attract all the other exhibits that are thematically similar, and shifts the ones which are dissimilar apart. So this is how a new architecture can be created by every move. This is how a new scenography is being done throughout the visit, practically in every second, if a visitor is entering a space of an exhibit, which has quite big implications, because in that sense, every time I'm walking through the exhibition, I'm creating multiple worlds around me, and I'm creating different versions of the same story around me. And also this is why it's quite a another experience than visiting a physical exhibition, since in a physical exhibition I can go with friends, I can talk about it, I can listen to a guided tour, it can be social activity of multiple voices, but here in this sense I'm all alone, and I'm playing God, to be very far-fetched, and recreating new words the entire time. So we ended up with this output in the experiment, and obviously, so you can create and recreate the exhibition scenography, but also you can fly over this whole thing and fly to another spot in the exhibition model, to sort of avoid the self-created filter bubble or clusters that that you surrounded yourself with your actual movement in the digital space. Yes, and from tomorrow on, at the Centre Pompidou, there will be a display, which we call the immaterial display, And this display, it's not immaterial at all, obviously, but it's way smaller than the spaces it represents, because it represents the two exhibition models that I just mentioned can be reached and can be navigated through with this display, which consists of altogether four monitors, like concave monitors, two on one side and convex monitors on the other side, enhance a level of immersion, because inside there is one person sitting in a chair, which is a modified office chair, but it's not a simple chair because it has sensors inside. So it's as soon as I turn with the chair, the digital environment in front of me on the screen is turning. As well, but it was not enough for the navigation, since these exhibition models are very complex and they include different layers of information. So this is why a handheld controller was also needed. And one can take a handheld controller and click with it and click on the different. Okay, so click on the different possibilities and look for information that on each and every object that is included in the exhibition models. So this is basically just a display on which any kind of three-dimensional walkable digital space can be represented, and it's based on a quite early invention by Jeffrey Shaw, who was a resident artist and also the head of the Department of Image Media at the ZKM in the late 90s. Who experimented with different imaging systems and also different systems of representation, let's put it that way. He also created an installation which was called the Virtual Museum, which was very similar. So there was an armchair. It was also an office chair, but a much bigger and much bulkier one. It was on a stage, a rounded stage, and you had to climb onto it and sit on this chair, and there was a monitor in front, and basically with your movement, with your rotation, you could navigate yourself through this, at the time, very, very simple digital space that was made up of three-dimensional words, letters that Jeffrey Shaw put together and modeled for this purpose. So around 20 years later, or maybe it's already 30, it's possible to be more complex practically and to represent such complex environments and also to create malleable spaces that are dynamic and recreating themselves throughout the visit and not just statically out there, and they can be navigated. So yeah, that's maybe the most important thing about these two exhibition models, and I could talk a lot more about the exhibition, what we did at the ZKM, which will not be seen at the Centre Pompidou because it will be much smaller than it was there, which is a shame. But maybe you already have some questions. Or shall I carry on, as you want?
Did you think of improving the exhibition?
No.
your views.
But it's only one person at a time. How many people can visit the exhibition at the same time? There is only one art chair.
Well, only one person can control it, but this is why the display has two sides, and you can see basically the same image on the outer side. So an entire group, and we tried this out in Karlsruhe, and it was really great that one person went to control the exhibition, and then a guide could stand on the other side, and the entire group could stand on the other side, and then they could see how, so they are basically taken through the entire exhibition while standing in front of it.
Yeah, maybe I got like one question, because so if I remember well, so right now there was this, let's say, joint program, this Beyond Matter program, mm-hmm. between Pompidou and, but I remember I met with Andreas Brockmann, like maybe it was like 8 years ago or 7 years ago, and he was already like making yes. interviews. And I think this is something we, that could be unfolded, like, you know, this whole research to reconstruct this immaterial and as you said, maybe it was easier with Iconoclash because it's a more recent exhibition.
Yeah.
But I guess for the immaterial, it was like almost a decade of work of meeting people, collecting different. Because it's not only just the pictures, but also a lot of people contributed. I remember Michel Dimoncordier was interviewed by Andreas.
Yes.
And so just maybe to give some elements of this kind of media archaeologic, different layers of investigation, because you said it was an investigation. And I think it's good to also maybe try to give some perspective upon this, like, in terms of time and team, how many people did when did it started, and it started. I don't know if there was some, if we can retrace the genealogy of this investigation.
Well, I don't think that I'm qualified to mm-hmm. retrace the entire genealogy of this this whole thing. What I can say from my perspective is that, or due to my knowledge, that Les Immaterials was not a particularly successful exhibition. It had less visitors than exhibitions at the time. It was not very popular, and it didn't have a very good resonance at the time. People thought that the different technical elements were not working. There were glitches in them, like and this and that. So these are reports from the time. And
do you have an idea of what kind of technical devices were at fault?
Yes, the headphones, which were infrared headphones that were locating, which is not, it's not used anymore, this mm-hmm. technology, and it was experimental, at least in that area. And it was an experimental technology, as far as I know. The visitors were supposed to access the soundtrack at each and every site. And I think that it was already a very confusing thing, because the soundtrack only had thematic connections to the art pieces or the exhibits presented in the space. And I think that it was already a very confusing presentation, in a way that that there was this additional layer, and maybe some of the visitors who thought it was not working just didn't get it. So that's still, most of the cases, a very big problem, that visitors don't get what the exhibition organizers try to convey them in an exhibition.
And so we have documents from Lyotard or Tiffon-Cornillo or anybody discussing those technical failures?
I don't think so, but I'm not the archivist in the team, so I'm I don't think that I'm the best person to answer this question. But yeah, so I wanted to return to your question, but now I'm confused. I'm sorry.
No, it was just a question to understand, like, yeah, the size of the team that work on this.
The size of the team that worked on this investigation. So the point is that and the genealogy, because what I know is that after the exhibition until the late 90s. So after the exhibition, until the late 90s, it didn't have lots of reverberations. And then in the late 90s, researchers started to investigate the exhibition. And in the 2000s, 2010 years, and now there were all together, if I'm not mistaken, 4 monographies on the show. So Andreas Bruckmann is not the first one who started to work on it, but he joined the wave. But he became very obsessive about it, that's for sure. Yes. And he's writing the 5th monography now.
I have a related question. You told that like Olivetti computer were used during for like storing stuff for the exhibition, and so I'm wondering, like for photos, old photo, we can just scan them and we have them, but for like old file format that require old computers, how did you deal with it, or how did the community of researchers dealt with that?
Well, that was a text experiment. So it's basically just printed out, and the original files are not in reach, to my knowledge, anymore. But what is maybe more interesting is the Minitel artworks, because I know this because a colleague of mine, Morgan Stico, was part of the reconstruction of many of the Minitel works in the Pamal group. They try to reach the archive of the Minitel archive. Because it was the network was shut down in 2012, and from that time it's not possible to reach the materials that that were on the network, and not even for research purposes. So although it's there, it's stored somewhere, but it cannot be accessed, and therefore they had to reconstruct from printouts. So this is what they did, and this is a very, very cumbersome work, and this is why not all the functions could be restored. So the restored works are not interactive, although the original ones were.
And did you like try to emulate the Minitel network for showing the same work?
No. Okay. They the works themselves are running independently. There are Arduinos attached to the Minitels.
But maybe a side note on this. So the Pamal group is based in Orléans and Karlsruhe.
Yeah.
Before they were in Avignon. It's the first and one of the only media archaeology. It's a department in France, institutional department, and they actually like worked with an engineer to emulate. So they use different technologies, and in Minitel actually right now there is 3 kinds of, let's say, different possibility to emulate it. So first is like to use like a Raspberry Pi, like a little computer that actually replaces the Minitel. But they decided to work with tonalities, and so they have like a server and a modem, and they don't, maybe they don't use it for this one, but for other pieces, the Chris Marker piece, they use it, and where they actually try to get the closest as possible as original speed and functionalities of Minitel by using the technologies that reproduce actually the network. So it's like they simulate a network within telephone server and they connect to many databases. So we have different ways to reproduce it. And there is a full documentation on the immaterial reconstruction, on the les actes du colloque, so the symposium publication from Surizi 2017, I think. Littérature numérique et médias sociaux was directed by Emmanuel Guez, who is also the, one of the PAMAL members. Mm-hmm. And it's in French, the full explanation of the Minitel modem and the, so, and there is also the interview of the people who made the piece in the material.
Do you know whether this exhibition was funded by Olivetti and France Telecom?
I don't know, actually.
Interesting to find out whether it was supported by the... because Minitel was... it was the beginning of Minitel in 85.
Yes.
It was not really widespread. Mm-mm. And maybe they wanted artists to use those technologies to show... So actually, it was a state-funded yes. technology. It's not mm-hmm. a private company, but so we need to find an art historian.
So yes, and maybe we can also switch because there was. I think it's also an important point to unfold. This ZCAM exhibition, because there was also like a soundtrack, so artists were invited to make a soundtrack and different, and it's a different kind of perspective. So it's like a revisitation of the exhibition.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically, what happened at the ZCAM, the two exhibition models and the display, what I was talking about, were just the initial point of the exhibition at the ZCAM. So it was a very complicated task to mediate this exhibition because we already started with a with two massive past exhibitions that were very complex themselves, and because of they are on the same display, a sort of comparison came about. So I wouldn't say that we tried to elaborate on a comparative analysis of the two exhibitions, but there were a few parallels and also a few juxtapositions were possible with these two exhibitions. In terms of how the curators thought of them as exhibitions, because, for example, Lyotard said that that Les Immatériaux wasn't an exhibition; it was a manifestation of ideas. And in retrospect, Peter Weibel and Bruno Latour. They came up with a new genre of exhibitions that they called Gedankenausstellung, so the thought exhibition, and Iconoclash being the first Gedankenausstellung that was followed by three more at the ZKM. So it was they were all sort of hybrids already, and then the models, the digital models made or created on the basis of them were again hybrids, and then we asked artists to react on these models and come up with something new, come up with their own interpretations. And for example, we asked Caroline Kirschner, an architect from Germany, who took the 3D models of certain objects and artworks from Iconoclash. She started to reshape and modify them, and created an animation in which we are going through a landscape where these different artworks, so for example the square of Malevich is being peeled down from the canvas, or like pieces of modern art are just falling apart to their pieces, and so on and so forth. Things start to move and change their substance, their shape and their form, and it's accompanied by ASMR sound. So these tingly feelings that are being induced by those sounds and these objects that are falling apart or coming together or being modified. So she wanted to point at the very visceral layer of digitality with the ASMR, with an ASMR approach. And she reached that with using 3D models from the Iconoclash exhibition. And similarly to that, Annele Trotté, another artist, she used the soundtrack of Les Immatériaux, and she created her own ASMR, partially ASMR soundtrack. That relates to a certain site, the angel, entitled Angel from Les Immatériaux. And in this recording that is a story, she tells a story of a plant that that is losing its identity while it's losing its genitals and very very interesting plant Orlando story is unfolding in this work that relates to the soundtrack of Les Immatériaux. There was another work that related maybe even more concretely to the soundtrack of Les Immatériaux by Gerardin Juarez. Although what she did was quite unique, she interviewed altogether more than a dozen people, and they asked about important concepts, the important keywords that, well, at least she thought were important for the not the exhibition Les Immatériaux, but for the digital exhibition models. So this is how we got some snippets for from Esther Leslie, from Peter Sandy, from some others. Who participated in this experiment and who shared their opinions and knowledge on what a model might be, what an asset might be, and some other keywords. And these interviews or snippets out of these interviews were brought into relation with artworks exhibited at the ZKM. Because that's another point of the exhibition, we had the chance to gather more than 50 artworks that were part of either Les Immatériaux or Iconoclash originally, and we could bring them together in a very new context, in a new correlation to each other. At the space of the ZKM, mostly from the collection of the Centre Pompidou and the ZKM, by the way. So she was reacting on that. Then there was another work, the Perfect Museum, which was a plinth, and on this plinth, to which there were also stairs, which looked like stairs of a typical museum building. One could like walk up the stairs, and not really literally. You didn't need to; it was just like a one step, and lie down on this plinth, and try out an app with which one could create, or one can still create. It's out there in the App Store. Perfect Museum, it's called. And one can create through a face filter exhibitions, because a face filter appears, it's an empty exhibition space, and artworks, three-dimensional models of artworks appear, and one can curate the exhibition with shaking one's own head. So that was the funny part of the exhibition, and there was one more piece that that is maybe more so it goes in depth in terms of spatial analysis by Fabric CH, Swiss collective of architects who have been working on the verge of digital and physical spaces for 20 years, and they created already earlier a scenography automaton, a sort of software with which, based on certain parameters, they can create and recreate new scenographies. And they fed this system with the different 3D models from Iconoclash and from Les Immatériaux. And there was a setup with a little server in the exhibition space, which created a new fusion of the two exhibitions every single day. So obviously it was not played out in real space, but it came up with this malleable, with this ever-changing possibilities of the digital space. So. Yeah, that was. These were the works, and all the artists I mentioned. They will be here on Saturday at the Centre Pompidou. They will present their works much better than I did.
Geraldine is coming on Saturday.
No, she will be online, unfortunately. Okay. But everyone else is coming. Mm-hmm. So.
And maybe just like a practical question, like so tomorrow it's open to anyone?
Unfortunately, you need an invitation.
We need an invitation.
And I can send you an invitation.
But and after it will be open for the audience?
Yes.
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 Okay. So actually tomorrow it's like
but I think that I'm to be honest, I'm not sure about this. Mm-hmm. But I think the exhibition itself is going to be accessible for the audience. There okay. is going to be some kind of like little reception after mm-hmm. that, and that's with invitation.
Okay, so we can meet tomorrow on
yeah,
in the
sure,
exhibition.
Sure.
And Saturday for the talks and.
Yes, it's the on Saturday. It's going to be on the afternoon. I'm ill prepared. I don't remember at what time, but it will be part of the Movimont festival.
Actually, we both of us we tried to find out on the website of Centre Pompidou. We didn't find any from it.
I sent it to the list. No, so in the MIG list, you already have the. Information for the event, but yeah, it's not easy to find because it's not on the calendar.
But the Pompidou Center website is notoriously yeah. bad. But yeah.
It's the same with the Centre Pompidou, the ZCAM website. Ah,
oui.
So, like,
complex.
I don't know.
Is there any more questions, or should we?
We can switch to informal yeah. mode, and actually, I prepared some food.
Wow, that's really nice.
Enjoy the rain.
Yes, enjoy the rain. Okay. Merci, Livia. Thanks.
And, thank you so much for listening.